The Sound of Football podcast was saddened to hear of the recent death of Gary Speed, former midfielder with Newcastle United, Leeds United, Everton and Bolton, and a player and manager with the Welsh national team. We would like to extend our sympathies and condolences to his family, and the following podcast is dedicated to his memory.
Previously on the Sound of Football podcast,
we're going to focus on the hero of the hour, Mr. Beckham. David, to you, I wonder to what extent he's interested in developing his sort of training skills, should we say?
It's very difficult because you don't sort of see him as a number two, do you?
No.
In the colloquial sense.
Yeah.
We have in the past, though.
I've called him a number two.
I have, yeah. France 98 being one particular occasion. Big number two there. It's another edition of the Sound of Football podcast with Graham Sibley, Terry Duffellin, and your host, Chris Oakley.
Very good of you to join us. Here we are then, show 97, and with a look at the calendar, we can see that January is not far away. That means that the January transfer window is not far away either. So what better then to discuss the whys and wherefores of whether it's actually convenient and practical to have a transfer window. Not only that, but also to put an extra slant on things, but also to make reference to an article which appeared in The Observer just a day or so ago, which discussed the potential for a managerial transfer window to be brought about, and the fact that perhaps UEFA are a little bit overdue in discussing whether one of those could be implemented soon. Anyway, let's go back to the start. The transfer window, chaps. As things stand, of course, the transfer windows in the close season and in January, it gives Jim White reason to be very animated. But is it of any benefit to anybody else? Is it right that we should have those two transfer windows during the course of the year?
I have to say that I am genuinely undecided about this.
Yeah.
There's part of me that thinks it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think the supporter of the small club, or the smaller club, if you like, I support obviously a Crystal Palace who generate a lot of good young players.
And there's usually a lot of outward activity during the transfer window.
Yeah, there can be. And so this sort of the non-transfer, the transfer, the bits where the transfer window is closed, is good because, you know, as a fan of that club, you know that you're going to have that player at least until January and at least until the end of May when that happens. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, free-thinking, free-market, uber-capitalist in me, as everyone knows, I'm well-known for my ultra-right-wing capitalist views, does feel that it is something of a restraint of trade and that, you know, in a free-market economy, you know... You know, firms should be entitled to buy and sell their labour as they see fit.
Yeah. I mean, for me, a transfer window over the last few years as an Arsenal fan has basically been one long drawn out episode where someone is going to be leaving the club to some other European giant.
Course. Yeah, you have actually become the Palace of the Premier League.
Yeah, and also being linked with people who will eventually be signed by Chelsea or Man City.
Indeed, Juan Mata being the latest. Yeah, relatively long time.
And Aguero, he was
of course,
he was linked with us as well. And so there you have it. And that's what the transfer and this most recent transfer window was just a last-minute trolley dash for Arsene Wenger as he desperately tried to fill his team up with something closely approximating a Champions League side.
Sky Sports News haven't quite reached that point now where the
trolley dash, that would be good, wouldn't it?
I think it would be brilliant. They should get in
Dale Winton.
For those who are outside the UK but are perhaps unaware of our broadcasting traditions, at election time, the BBC come up with all the more elaborate ways of graphically illustrating how the voting and the elections are going.
Yeah, it started in the 50s with the
swingometer,
which was just a big lump of cardboard with a pendulum on it.
And now it has sort of graphical representations of politicians edging their way slowly to number 10. And Sky Sports News, I think, have taken a little bit of this with the deadline day, there's an element of sort of like, you know, vote 74 about,
yeah.
About it. And one thing they haven't done, though, and obviously surely they will do, and if they do it,
yes.
Then we're suing, unless we get paid. Oh, no, of course, because they just steal other people's ideas, don't they?
Of course they do.
Yoink.
They should have a graphical representation of Arsene Wenger in his shopping trolley, running around.
Here we see. Here's Arsene. He's coming back.
It's coming down here now. What's he got here? Yes, it's Juan Mata. Oh, no, he's lost Juan Mata. There was Mikel Arteta. Here he is, Mikel Arteta. Now, will he get him? And let's go and then cut obviously to some poor schmuck standing outside the Emirates attempting to doorstep Arsene Wenger on his way in or out of whatever meeting he's supposed to be in. So, but I mean, that aside, in fairness, that is a perfectly good reason for keeping the transfer.
Well, that is, isn't it? When you were talking about the over elaborate graphics. It was Armando Iannucci when he did his alternative election night cup. When he had that big inflatable Charles Kennedy at the back, just to see what an inflated position Charles Kennedy will be in. And it just stayed deflated throughout the whole evening. And I think it's a shame they didn't have that for Nick Clegg in the last election.
Yeah,
it would have burst by now.
Yes, it certainly would have done.
Didn't they have like lasers? Some kind of like depiction of like a laser sort of exterminating, going round in a circle, kind of eliminating all these politicians. You could, anyway, I'm just talking. Let me have my say, Dan.
I'm just made one of your sort of like better dreams there.
Yes. Yeah, you're getting off the point now, Chris. Come on.
Oh, sorry. I do apologise. But I mean, of course, the one fear about having the old system, shall we say, not having transfer windows is that the wealthier clubs can basically then just cherry pick players as and when they need them during the course of the season. When things start getting a bit rocky, they could proverbially sort of panic and think, "Oh, we need a couple of players. Right, we'll go off to some weaker team with who are perhaps more desperate for the money and snap up their best players, thereby leaving them without their best players at a time when they need them most." And so, it's to revert back to the old system would surely create more disarray during, spread out across the whole season. Would that be about right?
Yeah, I guess so. I think we are living in a time though where you've got where players are exercising their legal right for movement, and I know it's only a few months that they have to sit out on a bench somewhere, but I think it only probably takes one player who misses out on the last minute transfer going through to say, "Well, stuff this! I'm not waiting here until the summer with a World Cup approaching or something similar," and says, "No, I want to go now," and kicks up a stink about that.
It's got the kind of whiff of a potential Bosman about it, hasn't it?
Yeah, not as major as that, but as something that you could see that if it was presented in front of a judge, they'd have a look at it and say, well
actually he's got a point.
He's got a point here, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and stitched him up and he couldn't go.
Yeah, which obviously also as well comes into the idea of, well, that would just play into the richer club's hands anyway, which always seems to happen in these sort of occasions. But which, when you're talking about free markets, it's always the one with more money that will always be treated better.
Hmm. I mean,
well, yes, indeed. But that's the inherent inequity of adopting a capitalist system in organised sport, is it not, comrade?
Well, yes, it is, brother.
Up the workers. Yeah, I mean, I suppose to be churlish, doing away with the transfer window system as we currently got it, Man City could have gotten rid of Carlos Tevez by now. There's one way of looking at it.
Well, yes.
If they could find someone to buy him.
Yes. So you have just run rings around me linguistically, yes. I'm not sure that we're going to kind of see a change to the system with regards to the transfer windows, but there was this story, as I mentioned earlier on, in The Observer yesterday, which discussed the possibility of there being a managerial transfer window. As we know, in this country and certainly in countries like Italy, I'm thinking of one name off the top of my head, there does seem to be a high turnover of managers at football clubs, and some would say that they are all too easily dismissed when they should be given more time to go on and do their job. Apparently, about 3 years ago, the League Managers Association pitched the idea to UEFA, and they said, well, we'll look at it in a few years' time. And being efficient as they are, probably Chief Executive of the League Managers Association, our old friend Richard Bevan, has probably had it scribbled in his diary for the last 3 years and thought, ah, right, time to bring this up again. And so he's now kind of gone back and sort of said, well, we look at this idea again. I don't know that they are going to, but is it... for a start, can you see it ever coming about? And B, is there really any need for it, would you say?
I would say that it would probably be more damaging to football managers than it would be protective of them. That would be my initial reaction to it. I can imagine if you only had, say, 2 months of the year where you could sack your manager... Mm-hmm. If for the whole of that 1 month period your manager doesn't get a win when he's been doing fine all the way before that, on that last day of the deadline, do you suddenly think, oh, hang about, if I don't sack him now, I won't be able to sack him until we're already down?
Hmm. Then you're really lumbered.
Force the issue.
I think you might do. Yeah, I think as much as you know, it would protect a manager when they're outside of the window. When they're inside that window, I think all of a sudden the focus is on there, and I think it's the pressure on clubs is even more
intensifies the merry-go-round as well.
Oh, certainly.
I mean, it's a pretty intense ride anyway. The managerial merry-go-round.
It is. But it is. You must be at least as tall to get on it, I think.
Particularly if they only switched it on, if they only activated it at certain times of the year, then you'd have players
it wouldn't work so
embarking
well, would it?
And disembarking at a very, very...
It'd be mothballed for 5 months at a time.
Yeah,
you know?
What kind of state it would be in. And the government would want to do away with health and safety standards to get rid of compensation
health and
culture.
Safety.
You know, Smithy's health and safety's gone mad. And, you know, it's just an accident waiting to happen, you know.
But I mean, think how many column inches the Daily Mail could write, though. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, what mugs we are.
Or the onion bag, for that matter. but
I mean, yeah, I mean, how would that work if you're a manager? If, let's say, you get you lose your job during a managerial transfer window, does that mean you're then out of work for the next 5 or 6 months, or do you have to then kind of get back in on the bottom rung of the ladder and kind of be?
That usually happens anyway, doesn't it?
Yes, that's true. That usually does happen. But yes, I mean, it would, Chris. It would mean, unless, of course, because. For first thing this would have to do is it would have to establish that managers get transferred, which technically speaking they don't. They get employed.
So they
leave their club and then they rejoin another one.
I think what it would do is actually make a legitimate transfer system of managerial transfer, which, you know, probably...
That wouldn't be a bad thing.
Well, considering now that they're all under contract... in a very similar way to players, then there's no reason why there shouldn't be a transfer market for managers. I can't see a reason why there wouldn't be one.
Well, I don't think there's any sort of formal... I mean, interesting. Well, they could tie it up with sort of like UEFA and FIFA's like coaching badges.
Mm.
And then that could act, if you like, as a registration process.
Yeah.
And so you would then be registered with a specific club. Mm. And then you would transfer that registration, which is basically, you know, in essence, what a football player transfer is.
Mm.
They could do that with managers, but they don't at the moment. They're more like employees. So what they do is they basically poach them from other companies. And then bring them there, or they hire them if they happen to be out of work, of which, you know, these days it tends to happen a lot more because they don't want to have to pay the compensation amount. But if they were to formalise that, then it'd be another way of making money. Because conceivably, if you are, let's go back to Palace's example. If Doogie Friedman takes Palace into the playoffs at the end of the season, they narrowly miss out on promotion. But they hold the registration for the coach, and let's say a Premier League club, let's say Stoke City, let's say Blackburn Rovers. You know, make an approach for Crystal Palace and say, we want your manager and we will give you X million pounds for his registration. This does away with all the backbiting and the, you know, meeting in cafes and, and all of that stuff that at the moment allegedly goes on anyway. Formalises the process, makes it a lot cleaner, and it means that, you know, clubs can then get a probably a decent settlement. And for their coach, so another method of sort of like commodifying the labour of a manager. It does. How does that sound? It sounds. I mean, it's got a familiar ring to it.
It does. Obviously. Yeah. It won't stop clandestine meetings in posh restaurants, will it?
No, but I mean, it will make us all the more outraged when we discover that it's happening. And that in itself is no bad.
Oh, well, that's good. That's great content. Isn't
it? We do like outrage.
when it's
meaningless and totally harmless outrage.
Yes, that is always a good thing.
But here's another scenario.
Yes.
Another scenario is that it's the transfer. It's the 29th, 31st, sorry, of December.
Yep.
And well, it could be the 29th of December. And, you know, the transfer, the managerial transfer window opens on the 1st of January, and Ewood Park is besieged by Blackburn fans
again,
demanding that on the stroke of midnight,
Happy New Year,
their manager is sacked.
Mm.
Absolutely demanding it, and then hounding them all the way through that window, demanding that their coach is sacked because they don't like him and they want to get rid of him.
Yes.
Now that, I mean, the guy's going through enough grief as it is at the moment. I can only imagine that this would be, and it won't stop them from booing him and abusing him as they appear to be doing at the moment during the time when the window is closed, because they'll just generally speaking be unhappy anyway. So, if anything, surely it would only heap more pressure on under-pressure managers.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't want that.
No, no. I think the only people that would get any benefit out of this would be managers.
And Sky.
Oh, and Sky, obviously. They would want it so that the transfer windows didn't match up. So at least like they could have a rolling monthly.
Every day, there was some kind of window opening or closing. Jim White would just
one window closes, another one.
I'm thinking Sky Sports would probably just have a Sky Sports transfer window channel and just dedicate.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, now there you go. Hang on a minute. There. Yeah, Jim White's own channel. There you go.
Sky Sports Jim.
24 hours Jim. It'd be like their own version of the Truman Show, won't it?
Yeah.
Where he lives in a house with Andy Burton. And he's going to build a big island in Isleworth, and it'll be under a massive dome, and he'll sail a boat up to the edge of it, and he'll touch it, and it will all be very poignant.
Will he talk to God?
He'll talk to Ed Harris. and he'll have a hat on back to front, and
enough.
Yes.
Enough.
Would you pay a subscription for a channel?
We've all seen the Truman Show. Listeners, if you haven't seen the Truman Show,
I've just given it all away.
Yeah, don't. Totally ruined it.
Can I just say at this point, spoiler alert. maybe I should have said that earlier on. Apparently, though, Neil Warnock is in favour of this, and who's to.
Neil Warnock, the man who seemingly his job is under threat
perpetually,
all the time.
I mean, he's kind of said that it would at least managers would know, you know, when they may be about to get sacked, rather than kind of having
when they come on their holiday.
At least it wouldn't have the kind of fear hanging over them for 12 months of the year. It would only be maybe for, you know, one or 2 month windows.
As a former employee of Her Majesty's Government, the Department of Work and Pensions, I wouldn't welcome it because, I mean, you know, we'd have to book extra staff in the job centres for, you know, all this sudden deluge of out of work football managers.
Yeah, but you'd think if anyone's going to be going to be in a good position to hire, it would be someone who works in an unemployment office. Surely you've got people coming in all the time looking for jobs, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Well, this is true. Yes.
Well, that's so I'm led to believe. I mean, you can tell me otherwise.
Well, no, I mean, yes.
Terry, I can imagine another one of your, and Graham, of course, one of your little kind of dramatised preludes to the next pod lot.
Yeah.
David O'Leary, next to the counter, please. Oh, dear. But, there's also the issue, of course, that with the number of managerial sort of sackings and dismissals that you get, as things currently stand, there's an awful lot of money being shelled out on sort of legal fees and such like. So I suppose Neil Warnock would be sort of saying, well, actually, you'd probably cut down on all that, all the kind of legal shenanigans and the huge amount of money that sort of changes hands as a result of that. Maybe he has a point. I don't know. But I think Richard Bevan is actually sort of coming out and sort of saying, well, no, shut up, Warnock. You don't know what you're talking about. So there are a bit of odds on this
one. I think it's quite good that there are a lot of legal fees because it puts people off actually doing this sort of underhand practice, but it doesn't seem to turn clubs away from it.
I'm just wondering to what extent it might put them off, given the fact that you've got your Man Cities and Chelseas of this world who can quite happily splash so much money on, you know, what's another sort of 30 million on you know, paying someone off or whatever.
So. Yeah, sure. But if you're interested in good governance in football, then what you want to, you have to acknowledge that the reality for most clubs is that they actually, when it comes down, it can't afford to behave like Chelsea or Manchester City. They need to behave responsibly. Now, one of the ways that they can do that is they can appoint the right coach in the first place.
Well, damn straight, yes.
And oftentimes, you know, you'll find that you've got people making a decision about which coach to employ, and you know, to be blunt, they don't have that much football knowledge. They're good businessmen, and they may be, you know, and good at making money in other areas. But if they won't have played the game, they certainly won't have coached the game. They won't necessarily know what a good coach is. Mm. This is why in Europe they employ directors of football to employ their coaches. But we don't agree with that. We don't hold with that kind of stuff here. It's not English, damn it.
No, indeed.
Even though we actually do have quite a few directors of football in England, we just don't call them that. No. And then, of course, the next step is to, you know, give them the time that they need. And even though there are times when that's difficult.
Yes.
You do have to persist with a manager, even if it looks like it's going horribly wrong. And, you know, in fairness to clubs like Blackburn, for whatever else that may be going on there, you know, they are giving Steve Keane the time.
Mm.
And indeed, Sunderland as well. I mean, one could argue that Steve Bruce has had enough time and that maybe his time is rapidly approaching.
Yes, but you can't imagine that it's going to be too long until you see planes flying over.
With streamers hanging out.
I think if I dare invoke recent events, not just here but abroad as well, is that I do think that, you know, that harassment and abuse of football coaches is possibly one of the lowest things that you could do, because it is after all football, and it isn't really that important, and to subject individuals to the level of abuse that that guys like Steve Keane have had to put up with, whatever else people may think of him. Steve McLaren as England coach is another example. I mean, it's not healthy, to be blunt. And I don't think he's desirable. And I do think that, you know, that if the legislators could come up with some method of regulation to, at the very least, discourage that sort of thing, then that isn't a bad thing. And if this is kind of leading in that direction, then maybe it does.
I think the whole Steve Keane thing is showing is a modern day ease of mobilisation of fan pressure.
Well, here we go. Here we go.
Rolling the sleeves. Here we go.
Here we go. We're going to talk box. On you go.
We're going to talk about now. No, we're not. Well, what we say is this: obviously, with social networking, it's a lot easier for fans to
with social networking and with 24-hour rolling news
and with 24-hour rolling news, ramming it down your throat.
Absolutely.
And also lots of local radio stations putting on 4-hour phone-ins every night,
desperate for contact.
Yes.
And more than half an hour's worth
and
of content.
And you can always find angry people to talk about, especially if you're in the Midlands, to talk about.
Blackburn, of course, is in the northwest.
Yeah, I know, but the Midlands seems to have a lot of these radio phone-ins, and I think people who live in the north.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, God, yeah.
Is it a bit like the Deep South in that respect?
It is, yeah. You can drive through the Midlands and everywhere you're going, they're all over the place.
Well, you've got like, you know, you're kind of like, what is it, like, what's his name, John Gaunt, who used to be in Midland.
Yeah, God.
You've got whoever the Midland equivalent is.
Yeah.
And I'm sure our Midland correspondent would be able to tell us that.
Have a Midland correspondent, don't we? In fact, started a new blog with him.
Well, I have,
that's
actually,
probably
yes.
going to come to an end in about... the viewers of Graham and Terry are not necessarily shared by Chris Oakley.
Yes, I just want to divorce myself from the statements that have been made.
But yeah, it's that whole sort of thing that actions now can seemingly sort of like come about very, very, very quickly and get out of hand very, very quickly. I don't think we should be in a position to stop supporters from making any sort of protest.
No, but they are after all the punters.
They are, but obviously, like what all punters can do is simply not turn up.
Yes,
I think I think that is what happens, and I think that is one of the major reasons why a lot of managers end up being booted out, because if an owner sees the attendances drop by 20%. They're not going to stand up to that.
This is the thing.
Program
the
sales or whatever.
The hardcore supporters who are most likely to protest also get very, very annoyed because they kind of, to an extent, they think, well, they're still going to go. Yeah. They can't walk away. But the underlying element to that is that there are the less than hardcore supporters who look at that and go, that's rubbish. I think I'll do something else on this Saturday.
Exactly.
And then they're gone. And it takes them months, years, or possibly never to get them back.
Yeah.
And I mean, this perhaps is what's going on at Blackburn. Mm. And in fact, the supporters perhaps understand this. The hardcore supporters understand this intrinsically, inherently, understand this to be a truth and think, you know, we're losing our status as a Premier League club. You know, we don't have the attendances. Sooner or later, we're going to get relegated and we're not going to come back up, which I suspect is probably the truth of Blackburn.
Mm.
And that's what's driving them. I mean, they're frightened of. They're frightened of relegation. And they shouldn't be because, as I said, it's just a game.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's interesting to look from as an outsider because you can't imagine what the feeling must be like at the grounds between you know the spectrum of support they have there, whether or not all of the supporters roundly agree with the keen out lobby, or if they think it's adding a sort of an extra poisonous sort of atmosphere in the stadium, which is even more worrying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Chris. Have you got any experience from that from West Ham? And I usually what happens at Palace is that you know managers, if they're not doing so well, they just tend to get booted out.
Yeah.
I mean, things are different now because our guys are a bit more considered. Well, no, I mean, you know, we had George Burley and that didn't work out and he was gone in a few months.
Yeah.
I mean, West Ham have had some troubling times down the years with either the coaches or chairman or decisions being made that haven't, you know, worked out. And it can
West Ham fans are sort of probably famously by this stage very ardent in their opinions, very sort of strong-minded, strong-willed, and aren't afraid to give their opinion, whether it's a player that's, if a player's doing very well, he'll be a hero of the club. If he's doing badly, then the crowd will boo him, so it applies to managers as well. And over the years, I mean, names that spring to mind, I think Lou Macari didn't last very long. He got short shrift. I think the fans quickly latched on to a poor start that he made, and I think they were quite vocal to get rid of him. That's going back a fair few years. Alan Kirbishley as well, of course, was Alan Pardew as well. It only takes a short run of bad form, really, and I think West Ham fans do start getting very restless. That's why I think this season was quite critical, really, West Ham being in the Championship, because you just thought if we get off to a bad start and it goes on for, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks, then it's going to be interesting to see whether Big Sam stays there for very long, but as it turns out, we've sort of made a good start. But West Ham fans, I think, have short patience, I think, when it comes to this sort of thing. And luckily, not every manager that we've had has had to sort of suffer at those, you know, at the hands of that. I'm pleased to say.
I suppose the other thing is that oftentimes managers are often the stooges to the board, aren't they? And they're usually the ones that get the stick. When in fact, I mean, in Germany, there was a very high profile case a few weeks ago. Of course, in Germany, they have the 50+1 rule, where the supporters own a 50+1 stake in minimum 50+1 stake in the club.
Yes.
So the FC Cologne supporters in their annual general meeting. Well, I mean, they didn't so much instigate it, but there was a lobby within that membership that wanted the board out, and they had the mechanisms with which they could do that. Now, it got pretty nasty, actually, and it wasn't a pleasant and it wasn't an ideal example of how these things should be done. But the upshot of it was the club president, Wolfgang Overath, who older listeners will remember from the 1974 World Cup. Said he was resigning at the conclusion of the AGM, but I think my point is that that kind of argument is taking place within a kind of structure, and there is an element of accountability and a process which supporters can use in order to air their grievances, whereas in England and in many clubs around the world that process doesn't exist, so they often resort to activities outside, which can then obviously be also, you know, unpleasant and perhaps misdirected and just plain rude. So any people from supporters direct listening might would say, well, you know, give fans a stake in their club, and these things may at least be regulated a little bit better. We might have a bit more stability. I'm not certain, but anyway.
Sadly, we're pretty much out of time. There was just a couple of very quick points I just wanted to make, which is, first of all, I wonder if we'd have had if there was a managerial transfer window and it was at exactly the same time as the players' transfer window, I wonder what sort of decision the Arsenal board may have made given Arsene Wenger's poor start to the season, and whether they'd have been tempted to sort of think, either we get rid of him now or we have to hang on to him until January. I mean, that's kind of a hypothetical thing, I know, but... there was that, and very quickly also, if you're talking about kind of adding in, shall we say, restrictions on such, like, I'd quite like to see even more restrictions, and maybe have a situation whereby all clubs in the Premier League have to employ their manager for a minimum 1 year contract, so that everybody's stuck with their manager for a whole year, and to just sort of see on a kind of level playing field situation to see how they manage with their respective managers. Not that that's ever going to happen, but just purely hypothetically, I think that could be quite fun to see. Maybe we'll just sort of think about that.
Things to think about for future podcasts.
Yeah, lots of stew over.
Indeed. Lots of stewing going on.
I mean, chew over, not stew over.
Chewing on stew.
Chewing on stew.
Anyway, there it is. The old clock on the wall beats us once again, so it's time for us to say thank you for listening, and, basically, you know the score. Get in touch with us if you've got any views. Facebook, Twitter, and all the rest. Details coming up shortly. But for the time being, thanks once again for listening. Do join us again soon, hopefully, for episode 98, which is just around the corner next week. Until then, from the three of us, it's a fond farewell. Goodbye.
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 If you have any ideas or suggestions for topics for future podcasts, please feel free to contact us via the usual offices: footballfairground.com/soundoffootball, twitter.com/soundoffootball, and facebook.com/soundoffootball.